Argentina is living today what Brazil experienced 5 years ago. Amid a challenging economic scenario, voters chose a radical political outsider to be their president. Someone who promised to be like a wrecking ball for the political establishment, but also who allied themselves with traditional figures in order to cement their wins. In Brazil, it was the 2018 victory of Jair Bolsonaro. In Argentina, it is the triumph of Javier Milei, who describes himself as an anarcho-capitalist who uses a chainsaw as a symbol of his intentions to shrink the Argentinian state.
Viva la libertad, carajo! Dios bendiga a los argentinos. Muchas gracias.
If you like explaining Brazil, you should subscribe to The Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We're an independent organization funded by subscribers, and you can help us stay independent and continue to produce award-winning journalism. And if you are already a subscriber, you can go the extra mile and join our Buy Me a Coffee fan page. In return, you get exclusive perks like special newsletters, behind-the-scenes content, as well as a shout-out here on our podcast. Today I'd like to thank our Buy Me a Coffee members, Gabriel Luca, Andrei Novoseltsev, Tom Nolan, Marta Martins, Pan Ludwig, Leslie Seal, Caroline Hubert, Mark Hillary, John Thomas III, Luis Hans, Erwin Menez, Orlando Black, Steve Knapp, Aaron Berger, James Coney, Karis Vresvik, Alasdair Townsend, Peter Abrahamson, Jimo Ofadeju, Marco Fryer, Miller Renascido, David Dixon, José Rose Stankovic, Emerging Market Muser, Yarden Iftar, Tanika Thompson, Anderson da Silva, Kat Kramer, Peter Suffering, Anna Lund, and someone who chose to remain anonymous. And our Buy Me a Coffee members come from all over the world, so please, if we're butchering the pronunciation of your name, do send us an email. And if you too believe in the importance of independent journalism and want to hear your name on our podcast, go to buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report and subscribe to one of the membership tiers. Click on buymeacoffee.com/Brazilian Report to learn more.
Estoy seguro que es más importante lo que nos une que lo que nos separa, porque eso es lo que va a hacer que pongamos de pie a la patria y volvamos a ser una potencia.
So as usual, when we're talking Latin America, I welcome Ignacio Portes, our Buenos Aires-based Latin America editor. Nacho, thanks for joining me after this massively eventful weekend in Argentina.
Yes, it has been a long campaign, a long year in Argentina, and there's still a lot of things going on and still a lot of things to happen because this transition is going to be intense economically, politically. So good to be here to talk about all of this.
Nacho, it's been a crazy couple of months in Argentina. And at this point, we all know that Javier Milei won 56-44% against Sergio Massa, the economy minister of Argentina and the representative of Peronism, which is this political force that has been at the center of Argentinian politics for the better part of the past century. Now, a political shellacking like this doesn't happen out of nothing. What paved the way for such a striking victory from Javier Milei?
You have to think that there are both national and international factors at play, right? Because Argentina's government has been in crisis throughout its whole 4 year period, really. The Alberto Fernández administration came back in 2019 with a promise of revamping the purchasing power of salaries for Argentinian workers after a really failed government of center-right Mauricio Macri. But the government has been chaotic. It has been full of internal quarrels between the president and her and his vice president Cristina Kirchner, who was the main actor of Argentina before Macri in the previous decade. So we've seen 20 years really of in which the Kirchner family was dominating Argentinian politics. And in the last 4 years, that leadership has been in question between the vice president, Cristina Kirchner, and Alberto Fernandez. And that the whole government has been extremely chaotic and non-functional for most of the term. And this has added to an economic crisis that has been brewing for a decade and getting worse and worse and worse. Inflation has risen to 150% and it's likely going to go significantly higher, probably twice as much as that next year. The purchasing power of salaries has continued to deteriorate. According to Argentina's poverty rate lines, which are different in each country, so you shouldn't compare Argentina's poverty numbers with the numbers of other countries directly, because each country has its own measurements of poverty, right? But inside Argentina, with its measurements, poverty is higher than it was when Alberto Fernandez took office. So the ruling Peronist administration had every chance of going out, right? In this context. But really in a broader context of the pandemic, that has meant that most government have not reelected in Latin America. I think from the last 19 elections, 18 governments have lost, 18 incumbents have lost since 2019. Only a couple of governments are popular in the whole region. AMLO in Mexico, Bukele in El Salvador, but most governments are unpopular. Lula is relatively popular too. For now.
Just as a cabinet, to your point, Lula is much less popular than he was 20 years ago, which, to your point, it's like the era of uber popular presidents in Latin America may be over with a couple of exceptions, but even Lula, who is by far and by any measure Brazil's most popular leader, he also faces a very polarized electorate.
Right. And we've seen in the last two decades in Latin America, especially in the first decade of this 21st century, governments that knew what to offer ideologically, what to offer politically. We've seen this so-called pink tide of center left governments offering progressive politics and some limits to the neoliberal policies we saw in the 90s and an active state presence to protect the poor and progressive politics in general, international alliances between these governments. And they all knew what to do, more or less. They had a recipe, everyone, Correa in Ecuador, Lula in Brazil, and so on and so forth. But that idea started to be put in crisis, I think, in the last few years, even though these governments, some of them have continued to hold on to power. There's been an emergence in the region and in more than the region, in North America too, in Europe, of our nascent right-wing movement that is of a young right-wing movement. I think that's what's interesting. It's that right-wingers used to be old and decrepit and losing and just undefensive, and now they're young and they have the political initiative across the world, or at least across the West, right? And that is what I was saying when I meant when I said this is also an international phenomenon, right? We cannot ignore the international dimension of Trump, Bolsonaro, Cast in Chile, and many, many more who are rising figures. Some of them have struggled. We've seen them in government already. So we've seen that it's not the same to be in opposition and just throwing rocks at whoever is in charge than having to actually manage things and seeing the complexity of the real world. And Trump has struggled, Bolsonaro has struggled, and they're out too. But Milei is part of this. He has his idiosyncrasies. He has his own brand. He's a libertarian economical guy who is not exactly the same as Trump or Bolsonaro, but he's definitely part of that movement. Argentina's economic crisis is much worse than anything except maybe Venezuela in the region. So that's a big, big factor for Peronism's downfall and for the rise of an alternative. But this is also part of something global, right?
I mean, as a Brazilian, it's too tantalizing to make the comparison between Milei and Bolsonaro, because it's like when you have cable and your neighbor doesn't, and you're watching a football game, and then they scream goal. And you know, like, the same goal is going to play out in your television. And for us, it feels a bit like that, because 5 years ago, we had a political establishment which was demoralized, in our case, by several widespread corruption scandals, in your case, by this dreadful economic scenario. And then this guy who is an outsider, who many think it's a joke candidate, comes and promises to change everything and to do everything unlike it has ever done before. And he says a bunch of outlandish things. And every time he says like a bizarre statement, political analysts point to that moment and say like, this is when he lost.
Actually, that's when he won
the race. But then he... Exactly. And I mean, and just like Bolsonaro, one thing it's kind of interesting is that Milei comes strong to the runoff, but then he allies himself with the establishment right. So in Brazil, we saw many of the people who fought with the Workers' Party tooth and nail for the presidency during the 90s say, well, we don't agree with him, but he is the lesser evil, so we're going to fully support him. And we kind of saw that with the coalition led by former President Mauricio Macri, right? And that alliance with Macri, who is a darling to the markets, with someone who is seen as much more moderate force than Javier Milei, did that change Milei's program in any way, shape, or form?
Yes, to everything you say, probably you said probably. This has been a regional dynamic, as you say. What happened with Brazil happened really, if you follow like Colombia's runoff, Rodolfo Hernandez allied himself with the traditional right to try to beat Petro in the runoff. We've seen this nascent right-wing anti-establishment figures to, when they need a final push, they go for the established, for help from the traditional right-wing establishment of the country, right? We've seen it in many places. And it happened in Argentina too. Milei had an excellent performance in the primary, getting 30% of the vote. Then we have a three-part election in Argentina. Then in the general election, he stagnated and he stayed at 30% when people were expecting him, analysts were expecting him to rise, to get 35, to keep showing progress, but he stalled. And but that is where he joined forces with Macri and Bullrich and the traditional right-wing establishment of Argentina, splitting the center-right between the centrists and the right-wingers. But most voters went to the right. Most voters followed Macri and Bullrich. Even other centrist candidates signaled support for Milei. I mean, it's always a question whether it was their support that did it or whether the politicians were just reading the zeitgeist of the moment and saying, this is the guy who's going to win. And if I support him now, I'm going to have a ticket to be a part of his government. Sorry?
Right. The bandwagon effect, right?
And if I support him, I'm going to have a stake in the future government. So this is good for my for power, right? And I think Macri, Mauricio Macri, the former president of Argentina, saw this coming a little bit. He has changed his public persona a little bit. He has always been a right winger from in his heart, right? A strong right winger. But when he was close to government in 2015, he started to moderate himself ahead of the runoff and during the campaign. Really, he tried to present himself as a centrist technocrat who just wants to get rid of the Kirchner family and have a more reasonable government that is less conflictive and so on. But he never felt fully comfortable with that and with some of his allies, and his government was full of internal quarrels in that regard. And when he failed, he became convinced that the reason he failed was that he was too moderate, economically especially.
Mm-hmm.
And he also started thinking that some of his allies backstabbed him, stuff like that. So, and he started to read the sign of the times. So he really turned from an Obama alignment at the start of his mandate. In 2016, Obama came to Argentina, had a lot of meetings with Macri. He was a darling of Obama. To moving in to take pictures with Trump, he visited Trump a couple of times. He started building links with Trump. Trump, in fact, was the guy who financed when Macri had a massive debt crisis at the end of his period. He was the guy that greenlighted the biggest loan in IMF history to support the Macri government until the end and stop him from completely collapsing. He gave him $50 billion, which is massive amount of money for Argentina. And since then, Macri has been,
He was also in bed Macri. With Bolsonaro, who for yes. many in the region Macri, was yes. radioactive.
Yes, and he Bolsonaro was in power at the time, and they felt comfortable. They naturally felt all right when they talked to each other. The tension that you saw between Alberto Fernández's administration and Bolsonaro was nothing like that during the Macri Bolsonaro years. So Macri was a bit between both sides, and he has been aligning farther right recently. And he has been a key member behind the scenes of the Milei campaign. Macri played two candidates, really. He favored Bullrich and he favored Milei at the same time in a more coy way. But Milei yesterday during his campaign, during his acceptance speech at night, I don't know if it was the first person or second person he thanked, was Santiago Caputo, who is as the chief of his campaign, as a real mastermind behind the scenes of his campaign. And that is a guy from the Caputo family, which was the best friends of Mauricio Macri, a powerful finance family in Argentina that has always been the behind the scenes, the people that do the behind the scenes dirty work of Macri, both in finance matters and in international alignment matters. So that thank you message was very telling of what really happened during the campaign, I think. Macri was always playing, I think, both horses. And if Bullrich won, who was his official horse, great. But if not, he had a B plan with Milei. And now we've seen him, after when Bullrich was out of the runoff, immediately came to endorse Bullrich, as we've told in our newsletter. Macri and Bullrich came to endorse Milei. Immediately after we had a confirmed Milei versus Massa runoff, and since then it's become obvious, right? But behind the scenes it was already happening.
En definitiva, siempre que quieran sumarse al cambio que la Argentina necesita, serán bienvenidos. Sabemos que hay gente que se va a resistir. Sabemos que hay gente que quiere mantener este sistema de privilegios para algunos y que empobrece a la mayoría de los argentinos. A todos ellos quiero decirles lo siguiente: dentro de la ley todo, fuera de la ley nada.
No, and I mean, this alignment between Macri and Milei will give Milei a majority in Congress. I mean, what's the outlook of the Argentinian legislature? How will that be an obstacle for a Milei government?
That is a very you got to go through a really fine comb to understand Congress right now. Because what we're going to see right now is a realignment of many things in Argentina. It's not so obvious who is who. You have to look at the individual guys. Because you generally have blocks, right? It's easy. When things are normal, you know, okay, this 30% is this party, 30% is this party, 40% is that party, all right. But inside those parties, there's a lot of forces, there's a lot of complexity. And even inside Peronism, there's a lot of complexity. There's even a couple of people in Peronism who might support some Milei reforms.
Especially because Peronism is like, is Peronism right-wing or left-wing? And the answer is yes.
Right. Lately, it has been left-wing, but Massa is not a leftist at all. He's a pragmatic politician, a centrist who will do what's needed at the times. His mentality is just pragmatism, right? Some people even say that at some point Milei had some links to Peronism when he was very, very young politically, like 10 years ago. He was trying to build some links with Peronism, very small things, right? But so there might be some bridges there. There's even talk that might be interesting to you that even the Brazilian ambassador, Daniel Scioli, who is a former presidential candidate of Peronism, he has some links with Milei through his likely interior minister, Milei's future interior minister, Guillermo Francos. So maybe Scioli even stays as the ambassador of Brazil. It's a possibility that he was the ambassador of Argentina in Brazil during Alberto Fernández's center-left administration, but maybe even he might stay during Milei. I don't know, but it's a possibility. So there are these weird... There are lots of, you have to look at the people, at the individual cases right now to see who will be who. And inside the center-right, centrist Juntos por el Cambio coalition, there is already an obvious split between the Macri and Bullrich people who will go for Milei and others who will go for
more independent.
Neither sense. Nor. Yeah. Neither nor centrist thing.
And these people, they are aligned with Buenos Aires City Mayor Horacio Larreta, right?
Right, right, exactly. That is a good way of seeing it. Larreta is part of this bloc and the traditional radical party, who is an old middle-class party in Argentina, but important. It will also be part of this centrist bloc, not aligned with Milei. But you have to look law by law, decree by decree. Are they, like, maybe they don't, maybe even Macri doesn't support some things of Milei. Dollarization, I don't know if he's going to support that idea. He doesn't like it. But many other things, like strong slashing of state spending, he will support it. And some guys have interests in the provinces they rule. So maybe there's a deal. If I give you this to your province, maybe you support me in this stuff. It's going to be law by law. Milei, per se, has very little in Congress. He has much more than he used to. He has like 8 senators. But even those senators, he doesn't even know some of them. Like, Milei grew so fast that he doesn't even know what's inside his party. He just told some people, okay, do something for this 8 provinces. I don't know no one there. Don't know anyone there. Just build some alliances there. And he doesn't even know what's inside of his coalition in some places, right? So
the proof will be in the pudding.
Yes. And if you really want to understand it, you have to look at it case by case, and it's a detective work. But he can build it. I mean, he can build it because he will have Macri by his side. And that is big. Macri more or less managed to govern. He managed to build the bridges, alliances. He has some experience. He was meeting with Milei until very late in the night, building the transition. Macri knows what a transition looks like, a quick transition. Macri won a runoff in very similar circumstances in 2015. And he had 3 weeks to build a government much bigger than he expected, because he won much, much more provinces than he was expecting to win. So Milei will copy him.
And speaking of building the government, Milei said on Sunday that the reconstruction of Argentina started that day. Has he announced any day one measures for December the 10th when he takes office? Has he announced important members of his future cabinet? What do we know so far about what will be this one-of-a-kind administration in Argentina?
He has announced a couple of names. I mean, justice minister who will run social security, but it's just here and there. You know, the big, big names that everyone's worried about, economy minister, cabinet chief, stuff like that, still a question mark. Interior minister probably is going to be this guy, Guillermo Francos, who is the centrist figure in the coalition who can talk to everyone. But the big questions are still open. He had announced, what's interesting is he had announced a guy to run the central bank, who was Emilio Campo, who is the proponent of dollarization, who no one believes in, especially in the Macri coalition, no one believes in. So it will be interesting if that guy actually stays as the future central bank chief. That's going to be something interesting to follow. But mostly what's going to happen, I think, for the next 3 weeks is Macri and Milei building the team behind the scenes. And maybe we're going to know it the day before he takes office, because there's a lot of positions to fill in, and we'll see what he does in terms of names. But in terms of policy, what we are seeing, I think, is the idea that we will have a Macri rerun on steroids, like a stronger version of Macri. Mm-hmm. At least that is the blueprint I have in my mind right now. And I think that's what markets are seeing too, because they really liked the results yesterday. They didn't like Milei's win in the primary. That's very interesting. After Milei's primary win, markets dropped significantly because his proposals, even though Milei's a market fundamentalist, the most market fundamentalist president you have probably seen in the world in the last 100 years is Javier Milei. His whole mind is built on supply and demand.
Total laissez-faire.
Yes. And just everything he thinks about it like that. He's a mechanistic a brain that just everything is supply and demand, the markets and Austrian economics. He even applies it to, like, you know, the organ donors. It should be markets. It should be a free market of organs according to his philosophy. So he is an extremist in this regard. And bankers and investors are more pragmatic people and that are out there in the real world. And we're a bit, I don't know if this is going to work. This dollarization proposals don't convince us at all. But the arrival of Macri was very important for securing these upper middle class elderly votes that went for him in the run of to give that. Maybe they would have gone, many of them anyway, but to give calm to these people to say, okay, this is not so much uncharted territory if I'm putting my ballot for Milei. He was important in that regard, and he is important for markets right now who have massively rallied today in Argentina, 20, 30, 40% rises in the stock market. There's even rumors that he's going to privatize Argentina's biggest oil company. I mean, he has said he wants to do that, although it's hard to do it in Congress. There's a lot of problems to do it, but...
Yeah, that's exactly what I want to ask you, because Milei told the radio station today that anything and everything that can be privatized will be privatized. And Bolsonaro said the same thing in Brazil, but by the end, he managed very few privatizations, even if one of them, of Eletrobras, which is a massive power company here, was quite consequential. But, I mean, how likely is Milei to deliver on these promises? Because, I mean, in Brazil for many years, and that has changed a little bit, but still, for many people, privatization is a dirty word. How is in Argentina in that regard?
I think in Argentina, there's been a cultural change in the last few years. We've been saying some things about this in our podcasts, in our newsletters, in our website, that Argentina's culture has been shifting to the right in economic terms too. We talked about a poll in which Argentinian people say they value private initiative more, they value privately created jobs. And this didn't used to be like that. 20 years ago, it was the exact opposite when the Kirchner family was starting to rise, when the neoliberal consensus of 2001 collapsed, the ideology of the people was the opposite. You saw assemblies in the streets like it was the French Revolution and in the middle of Buenos Aires City. And now you see the exact opposite. You see people calling for police and order and no one protesting in the streets and private initiative and less state intervention and so on. But one thing is the abstract idea, and the other thing is to actually make it happen. And transitioning from a very strong state to a very private economy can be extremely, massively, brutally painful. I mean, just look at, I don't know, the fall of the USSR. Just look at what happened in Venezuela when Maduro did a pro-market turn a couple of years ago. The poverty levels can rise brutally if you suddenly slash social protections, if you privatize massive, if you slash a lot of public jobs, if as is the case in Argentina, the currency has a pegged value and suddenly you free to the market and there's a massive devaluation. That kind of transitioning from the idea to the reality can be brutal, and people can, the support that Milei has right now, which is very significant, could start to shrink when people start seeing what the painful consequences of such changes are. And the one thing that I think is likely to happen soon is the elimination of Argentina's crazy multiple exchange rates that we have been talking a lot about them in the Brazilian report.
And Nacho, if you can just explain a little bit, what are those many crazy exchange rates, if you can, in a nutshell, for people who are not familiar with it?
Well, it's crazy if you haven't lived it, because it's so foreign to people's experience in countries who have just their currency has one value and not 10. But basically, Argentina's peso is terribly poor and weak, and no one believes in it, so it's constantly devaluated. But the government doesn't want to accept that devaluation, so it tries to sustain its value artificially by loaning money in order from foreigners, from the US first, from China, from whoever it can be, from the central bank's reserves, in order to try to keep the official value of the currency stable, the one used for imports and exports, while the free market value of the currency used for, if you want to actually buy that currency and have physical dollars in your house, goes much higher, because there's restrictions to buy those dollars through normal channels. So you start to get an official market and a black market of for the value of the currency. And then you have a lot of mixture of these markets, and it gets more complicated, but that's the basic idea. And the thing is that this is all done to avoid devaluation, which are painful, right? But at some point, the government cannot keep loaning money and cannot keep using its reserves because it runs out of international reserves and gold and whatever central banks have, right? To sustain the official value of the currency. And the devaluation becomes inevitable, and the pegged price of the peso eventually converges with the much higher free market value of the currency, and there's a massive devaluation. And I think that's what we're going to see right now. We saw that in 2015 when Macri came to power. This was his first or second thing he did, was devaluate the currency and unify the multiple exchange rates that the Kirchners had. And I think we're going to see the same on the first day or the second day or the first week of Milei's administration. And that is going to immediately cause prices to rise. We're already seeing prices rising. There's reports that if you go to a supermarket right now, prices are rising because commerces are covering, right? That they are anticipating the devaluation. They're rising the price of their stock in order to protect. Like if you're selling whatever you're selling, you don't want to sell it below the price that it will cost you to rebuy it, right? Because you lose your capital. So the supermarkets are already hiking prices, and that is going to cause social conflict from the start.
No, when you talk about the rising costs for groceries, it reminds me of when I was a kid in the early 90s in Brazil, and we had massive inflation of over 1,000% a year.
Like we did.
And prices would change more than once during the same day. So it would be like your parent or your grandparent. Someone would take like as many kids as they had. And when you entered the supermarket, it was like each one had a list of goods it was going to take, and it would run before that guy, which had like the price ticket machine would come and put a new price tag. So you would race the supermarket staff to get like the price, the previous price tag before they could alter the price again.
Yes.
So it's pretty much what your guys are living now, right?
Not exactly, because that is, I think, another level. That is thousands levels of inflation. That is what we saw in 89 here too. And Peru, it happened everywhere, like most countries in Latin America, right? But that is thousands of inflation. What we have right now is 100. So you don't see prices rise 2-3 times a day. It's not that manic experience of you get your salary and immediately you got to run to the supermarket because tomorrow things are going to be worth 50% more, and it's just insane. Tomorrow things might be worth 5% more. It's still crazy that mm-hmm. they rise so fast, but it's not that completely insane dynamic of hyperinflation. It's constant price rises. But I don't think we're going to see that that level of inflation. What we're going to see is a one-time massive rise in prices, I think, because it's a sudden devaluation. It's a sudden convergence of the official exchange rate with the black market exchange rate. And we might see a month of or a couple of months of 40% inflation in the month, which is
crazy,
insanely high for anyone in the world. But it's more of it's a shock. It's a sudden shock, right? In prices, and not that kind of constant insanity. I think that is the foreseeable future right now in the coming months. It's a price shock and an inflationary shock, and that is going to lead immediately to social conflict. And that is going to come probably with the first signs of the chainsaw, right? The slashing mm-hmm. of public spending. Milei goes around with this chainsaw without the part that cuts, thankfully. So there's no accidents in the campaign. No one has lost an arm so far. But it symbolizes what he wants to do with the state. And he goes with this crazy face like a madman saying, I want to destroy the Argentinian state. And we're gonna start seeing some attempts at doing that much more strongly than Macri did. We're going to see full ministries eliminated and people fired. And that's immediately going to lead to conflict. The rise in prices for basic goods for the working class, and the conflict with the state apparatus, or with all the people that are going to be fired, and they're going to try to close their offices and so forth. That is going to lead to immediate social conflict, I think.
Now let's move to the international stage, because I want to talk to you about the Brazil-Argentina relations. And I mean, football rivalry aside, these are two countries that are umbilically connected and they depend on each other. They are each other's main regional trading partner. Now, there's a massive pipeline project involving the two countries, lots of trade of industrialized goods. And of course, they are the biggest members of Mercosur, which is a trade alliance that also includes Paraguay and Uruguay and possibly Bolivia soon if the Brazilian Senate votes it quickly. Now, the bloc is in the home stretch of negotiations with the European Union, and Brazilian negotiators have said they expect an agreement to be reached by, to be announced next month. But Milei has already talked about imploding Mercosur. He says the bloc is good for nothing. He also has voiced his opposition to joining the BRICS alliance of developing countries and talked about severing ties with China. Now, there's a lot to unpack there, but what can we expect from his foreign policy? Because let's just remember also, he has called Brazilian President Lula, so the president of his biggest neighbor and one of the big, the most important countries in terms of bilateral relations for Argentina, a communist and a crook. And Lula's press secretary said that there will be no relationship until Lula gets an apology. So what could we expect from that foreign policy?
Yeah, as you say, Argentina and Brazil really have a pretty good relationship for a pretty solid, really there's no rivalry besides football, as you say, that the countries have the two populations are in good terms with each other. The governments generally have been in good terms with each other. In the last few years, we've started to see some conflict when Bolsonaro and Milei, first with Bolsonaro, right? We saw tension between the two embassies. We saw this guy that I just mentioned, Daniel Scioli, former Peronist presidential candidate, act as a buffer between Alberto Fernández' administration and Bolsonaro, because Alberto traveled to Brazil when Lula was in jail, if you remember, to support him in Curitiba, to call for his release during the presidential campaign of Alberto Fernández. And when the tide was starting to turn around for Lula, right, there were some signs already that maybe he could be back and that he might somehow get out of his judicial troubles. So the relationship between Argentina and Brazil started to have tensions during the Bolsonaro presidencies. And this guy Scioli was sent as a buffer in order to, he's another of these pragmatist Peronists who can talk to everyone, in order to not break the block, right? To just find a way to be diplomatic and not have another problem that none of the administrations really needed.
And he was quite successful in that, because remember when they, Brazil and Argentina negotiated the reduction of import tariffs, of common import tariffs, as a way of keeping Mercosur still together when there was a lot of momentum against the bloc, especially from Bolsonaro, who, just as Milei, was always a Mercosur denier.
Yes, no, exactly. And Mercosur has a lot of tensions. Uruguay wants to do a free trade deal with China. He wants to move Mercosur in a more pro-market direction. Milei, obviously, would like to either move it in a very pro-market direction or just destroy it. And so now we're seeing the table shift.
The tide turn, right?
Exactly the opposite in each country, right? Now, Argentina, it has a very radical right-wing government, and Brazil has a center-left government. It used to be the other way around.
Yeah, Lula is outnumbered, right? 3-1.
Right.
He has three right-of-center presidents who are to different levels skeptical of the bloc. I mean, what do you think could be the consequences for Mercosur? Because like you said, Uruguay is like a l'enfant terrible. It wants to follow its own path. Paraguay has already said that if Brazil does not conclude the negotiations with the European Union until the rotational presidency moves to Paraguay, Santiago Peña said he will not continue negotiations and he will move to other trade deals with Asian partners. And now you have Milei, who is this sort of rogue president or like a wild card that nobody really knows how far he will go in his to live up to his rhetoric.
I think it's interesting that Milei told today in a radio interview, in the same radio interview that you mentioned, he said he was talking at 4:30 a.m. in the morning with Uruguay's president, Luis Lacalle Pou, was coincidentally in China, which is, this is, for Lacalle Pou, China is very important because he is using China as a, he wants to do a free trade deal with China in order to liberalize Mercosur. Milei hates China. China is weird because it's communist and pro-market. It's a complicated thing, but Milei hates China for ideological reasons, but he might have an understanding there with Lacalle Pou, maybe in some ways. Okay, let's open this for competition from whoever, from China, the US, whatever. So they might find an understanding between Milei and Lacalle Pou and Paraguay. And Lula might be the odd guy out. But Lula is, I think, a bit more centrist in these matters than the Kirchners. And so he might be more, I mean, he wants more or less that they deal with Europe, at least with the Kirchners, didn't want at all. The Kirchners were even more protectionist. They didn't want the trade deal with the European Union that Mercosur signed during the Macri administration. So, but what I really think is that in the short term, this will not be a priority for Milei. He will have so many problems that picking a fight with Brazil and Mercosur and getting to all these deals with China, he will have the economic front as the number one priority, the political front, the international relationships. He has already said that his first trip will be to the United States, although not, it's weird, not in a for diplomatic reasons, but for spiritual reasons. He said
he's going to go even before he takes office, right?
Yes. He will go before he takes office to the U.S., to talk with some rabbis, friends of him in Miami and New York, because he's having all this mystical conversion to Judaism. Part of his, he has a bit of a messianic thing in his head about being the new leader of Argentina, and this has come with religion, right? It's weird, but it is what it is. And he's going to, the first trip he's going to do is going to be to the U.S. and probably then to Israel. So I don't think he's thinking about Brazil first right now. He will eventually deal with that, but I think Mercosur is low in the list of priorities, and it has been low in the list of Argentina's priorities really during the last few years. Like, Argentina's idea of the Mercosur is just, I don't know, let it not be a problem in our day-to-day agenda, because we have so many problems, like inflation collapsing, social conflict, the central bank, internal conflict between the parties, constant political campaigns, that Mercosur just is the 15th priority for these governments. So I think maybe it will be in the back burner for some time, and maybe they'll try to smooth it out somehow. But eventually he will probably try to do something with it, and it will be in the liberal, the direction is clear. He will push for liberalization or for the destruction of Mercosur, which is generally an overall protectionist customs union, as opposed to other blocs that we've seen in Latin America, like the Pacific bloc, which was much more pro-market and pro-commerce and no protectionism. But it will be in that direction, whatever Milei does. But the timing might be later. It might not be the first or second thing that we see.
Right. I think with that, we are going to wrap. But Nacho, thank you very much for your insights. It was great as always. And I'm sure we're going to have even more in-depth analysis on Wednesday when we have our next Latin America Weekly newsletter, right?
Yeah, there's going to keep being news of Argentina. That's for sure. It's been an intense year, and I think it's going to be another intense at least a few months for sure. The transitions are the times in which most things happen in most governments. So we're going to keep seeing Argentina in the news for sure.
Nacho, thanks again. See you soon, man.
See you. Bye-bye.
If you like Explaining Brazil, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts. It takes only a second and it will help us reach a wider audience. Or better yet, subscribe to The Brazilian Report, the journalistic engine behind this podcast. We have a subscription-based business model, and your memberships fuel our journalism and keep us going and growing. Thanks to our subscribers, we have been able to cover Brazil and Latin America extensively, and our work has won and been shortlisted for several international journalism awards. More recently, our newsletters won the Best Newsletter Prize in the Americas from the World Association of Newspapers and News Publishers for a small or local newsroom. In order to keep doing that work, we need your support. Go to brazilian.report/subscribe. I'm Gustavo Ribeiro. Thanks for listening. Explaining Brazil will be back next week.